Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming to CSIS this morning. We'd like to welcome you all here. We have a program today that looks at the U.S.-New Zealand relationship, and we'll also launch a new study by CSIS. We have four speakers. In order, would be John Mullen, the president of the U.S.-New Zealand Council. Then I'll talk a little bit about the study itself, and we'll hear from Ambassador Mike Moore, the new New Zealand ambassador to the United States, and finally, Assistant Secretary of State for East Asia and the Pacific, Kurt Campbell. I'd like to kick off directly by inviting my colleague John Mullen, the president of the U.S.-New Zealand Council, to make a few comments. John.
Thanks, Ernie. We're here today, as Ernie said, to present and launch an important study being undertaken by CSIS on the strategic aspects of the United States-New Zealand relationship. My council, the U.S.-New Zealand Council, and our counterpart in New Zealand, the NZ-U.S. Council, are proud to be the major sponsors of the study, which is being carried out in partnership with the New Zealand Institute of International Affairs in Wellington. Ernie will describe for you the scope of the study, the process, and the objectives. What I'd like to do is to spend a moment on why this is important and how it will be used. When I took this job 5 years ago, U.S.-New Zealand relations were cordial, with cooperation in a variety of areas that recognized our historic ties, but colored by the overhang of the disagreement stemming from the late 1980s about allowing nuclear-powered ships in New Zealand ports. Today, the relationship is dramatically different, characterized by both sides as the best in at least a quarter century. There are many reasons for this turnabout, but principal among them is that some wise people in Washington and Wellington decided that in the 21st century, the relationship between longtime friends that shared so much in terms of history, culture, values, law, economic, and political interests should not be defined by the one or two interests on which they disagreed, but rather by what they had in common. And their mutual interests in the dynamic Asia-Pacific region. So beginning with the George W. Bush and Helen Clark administrations and now accelerating in the Barack Obama-John Key era, leaders like Chris Hill and Kurt Campbell, from whom you will hear in a moment on the U.S. side, have brought the two countries to a new level of cooperation and collaboration. And in addition to that cooperation, there have been other signs of the new relationship. Several years ago, for example, a Friends of New Zealand caucus was formed in the House of Representatives. And importantly, the United States joined, within the last year, the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade negotiations, an arrangement that grew out of the P4 agreement among New Zealand, Singapore, Chile, and Brunei. But it has not been government initiatives alone that have contributed to the positive swing in the relationship. In the event that my council and our New Zealand counterpart started in 2006, called the U.S.-New Zealand Partnership Forum, is acknowledged to have made a significant contribution to the improved relationship. Following the initial forum in 2006, Clayton Yeider, who co-chaired for the U.S. with George Mitchell, famously described the forum as the best bilateral event I've seen in years, adding that he didn't recall any country ever sending that much intellectual horsepower to Washington at one time. Indicative of that intellectual horsepower, which has only increased in subsequent years, were the New Zealand co-chairs, both former prime ministers, Jim Bolger and now Ambassador Mike Moore, along with several ministers, the leader of the opposition, and chief executives of New Zealand's leading companies. Happily, the U.S. delegations over the years have matched that intellectual horsepower. In 2007 in Auckland, then leader of the opposition, John Key, said it makes sense to find occasions such as this, close to but not formally part of government, to allow a free flow of ideas. And indeed, that has been the pattern. 50 high-level opinion leaders from each country, from government, business, academia, media, and beyond, talking off the record and increasing the understanding between these two Pacific Rim nations of vastly different size, but of similar mind and energy about regional goals. So we've had three of these forums. The fourth will be in Christchurch this coming February, which brings us back to the CSIS study. When Ernie Bauer, who combines long expertise in Asia with enormous energy and creativity, recently became the senior advisor and director for Southeast Asia programs here at CSIS. He immediately realized that no one had done a strategic study on the broad aspects of the U.S.-New Zealand relationship, a relationship that in recent years has been focused not exclusively but primarily on trade. And given the positive turn in the relationship that I've been referring to and the foundation that has been built over the past 5 years, such a study, Ernie felt, was both necessary and overdue. So he proposed to have the CSIS study, to have CSIS take the lead on the study, but he also proposed that it be presented at the Partnership Forum. He quickly obtained enthusiastic support from the State Department, from the New Zealand Embassy and the government, and from the two councils which agreed to fund it. So the study, Pacific Partners, the Future of U.S.-New Zealand Relations, will be presented at the opening session of the Fourth Partnership Forum in Christchurch, February 20th to the 22nd of 2011. We are thrilled with this initiative, which we think will build on the momentum and better define not only the potential for the future, but also the goals and ideas that can allow the full realization of that potential. So with that, I'm delighted to turn the podium over back to my good friend, Ernie Bauer. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. And I'm mindful that I'm between you and two rock stars, so I will be I'll be brief. What I'd like to do is just describe what the study is about, what issues it will cover, and talk a little bit about the process of the study, which I think is going to be very important. One of the guys I really respect in diplomacy is Tommy Koh, who is the, many of you know, was the U.S. ambassador here in Washington and is sort of a minister with any portfolio he wants in the Singapore and foreign ministry. And Tommy told me when he was negotiating, he was the lead negotiator for Singapore, for the U.S.-Singapore Free Trade Agreement, Ernie, you know, it's not what you come out with sometimes in these agreements, though that's important. It's how you do it. And in this case, we are winning the war with every meeting that we have with our two sides. And what he meant was he's bringing the leaders from the United States through our bureaucracy, people that hadn't been to Singapore before, hadn't thought about Singapore before, in contact with the Singaporean colleagues who might not have thought about the United States before and have been very narrowly focused. And, you know, Tommy was right. The U.S.-Singapore relationship absolutely blossomed after that FTA negotiation, not because of the paper that they agreed upon, but because of the relationships that were built. And I think that, to me, is a really important part of this study. I'm mindful of the Koh doctrine, and I'm very fortunate to have people like John Mullen, Kurt Campbell, Mike Moore, and his predecessor, Roy Ferguson, working with us on this, because the energy behind this effort is very significant, and I will tell you that that's going to make all the difference. The study, as John said, is called Pacific Partners, the Future of U.S.-New Zealand Relations. CSIS is leading the study. We, as John mentioned, our counterpart doing research in New Zealand is the New Zealand Institute of International Affairs, based in Wellington. They've got an incredible team working on their side. Each of us has broken out a study team looking into, with leaders looking into five areas. Those areas are trade and investment, security cooperation, science, technology, and education links, sociocultural ties, and transnational issues, by which I refer to issues like climate change, humanitarian assistance and disaster relief, nuclear nonproliferation, and global health, to name a few. And we'll also look at the impact of regional architecture on all of these areas, and also the what the U.S.-New Zealand relationship can add to those to the discussions of regional security and trade architecture that are being built right now. As John mentioned, the study is funded by the U.S.-New Zealand Council and the New Zealand-U.S. Council, which is based in Auckland. Obviously, John's organization is based here. And we'll present the final study to the U.S.-New Zealand Partnership Forum in Christchurch, New Zealand, in February. And we couldn't mention Christchurch without saying a word about the suffering of the of our friends in New Zealand who are recovering and putting their lives and their businesses back together after the huge earthquake that hit them just a little more than a week ago, and I think more than 100 aftershocks. So I understand they're doing well and coping well, as we could expect Kiwis would, but I know everybody's hearts go out to our friends there. The study will be directed by a high-level board of advisors comprised from leaders from both countries. On the New Zealand side, these include James Bulger, former Prime Minister and Commonwealth Secretary, Don McKinnon, former Minister of Foreign Affairs and current President of the New Zealand Institute of International Affairs, Russell Marshall, former Trade Minister. Bulger is James Bulger, the Prime Minister and Council Chairman of New Zealand U.S. Council. Don McKinnon is the former Foreign Minister and Commonwealth Secretary, former Foreign Affairs Minister, and New Zealand Institute President Russell Marshall, and former Trade Minister Jim Sutton, and former Ambassador to the United States John Wood. On the U.S. side, CSIS President John Hamry will serve, U.S. New Zealand Council President John Mullen, who you've just heard from, the Honorable Rick Larson, who's a Democrat from Washington, and former Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage. And there is one pending confirmation that we'll announce as soon as we get that confirmation. Again, the study will be published in February 2011, but I hope a lot of you in this room will work with us and track the progress of the study. We will have important seminars to look at the initial findings of the study and gather input from experts, one here in Washington, D.C. In October, third week of October, and one in Wellington. One in Wellington. In November, probably just after the APEC meetings in Japan, so we can get significant participation. So that's the study. I would now like to call on a man who has just arrived in Washington. You talk about energy and smarts and a great sense of humor, somebody who you couldn't think of a better architect to move this relationship further, former Prime Minister of New Zealand, former Secretary General, or Director General, sorry, of the WTO. Please join me in welcoming New Zealand Ambassador Mike Moore.
Well, thank you, Ernie, for that introduction. It's true, I have a great future behind me. Some people don't believe it, but it took a bit of convincing for me to come out of retirement because I discovered capitalism late in life and to come up here and to put the uniform on again. And I've done that because I think things are moving in a substantial way and I want to play a modest role in moving this thing forward. And thank you, Ernie, and thank you, CSIS, for this initiative. I have to acknowledge our good mate Kurt Campbell for his positive leadership and his direction. And his visit to New Zealand was a very important visit and went down very well. I need, of course, to thank John Mullen. He's got out of bed. He's had both his knees fixed so he can run faster. And he's been a great colleague and friend. This study is timely. It's constructive. It will be a useful contribution to our relationship. CSIS is an acknowledged leader in this field because your work is robust, you have integrity, and this will be useful as a roadmap for all of us. My Prime Minister sent me up here with a very specific instruction to make myself useful. I think he said bloody useful. So I'm very pleased to be able to endorse this useful project. And as a former politician, I'm used to claiming the credit for things I've had nothing to do with. Our relationship has been growing from strength to strength. And I guess one day historians will look back with puzzlement as to why there was a period of confusion. We have so many common interests and values. To start with, we like each other. I was Minister of Tourism in the 80s, and we used to survey visitors leaving New Zealand. What did they think of New Zealand? Americans leaving New Zealand in the 80s said this about us. We like New Zealand. Reminds us of America when Eisenhower was president. I didn't know whether to be insulted or flattered. I preferred to be flattered. We do good business together. We study in each other's countries. Our scientists are breaking new boundaries together, including by developing new understandings of global climate change and joint research in the Antarctic. We work together in support of peace and prosperity in many parts of the world, just not our region. And our Prime Minister, John Key, was pleased to be able to contribute to the Nuclear Security Summit this year. Yet there is much more we could do and should be doing together. Our relationship should develop by design, by deliberate strategy, and in a thoughtful way. Therefore, I welcome the focus, the rigour that the CSIS study will bring to the relationship, and the challenge that I hope CSIS will give policymakers in both countries to do more, to do better. We can take criticism. We welcome advice. With criticism and advice, we can lift our play. The clichés are true. We live in challenging and difficult times. We too have economic challenges at home. We have to contend with new and emerging security challenges. We live in an era of changing geopolitical relationships. We are all hostages to the future. A future we must face, not fear, and face together. For those of us in the Asia Pacific, this is particularly evident. We in New Zealand are excited by the growth, opportunities, and potential in our region. And we have not stood still. With a number of FTAs with economies of our region already under our belt, including one with China, the first developed country to conclude, we're working hard to integrate our economy into the region. When I was born, 90% of what we produced went to England. Now we're sending more to Korea than to England. We want the US to be part of this picture of regional prosperity too. We are working with the US and other regional partners in a Trans-Pacific Partnership. We are very ambitious. We want to see a high-quality 21st century FTA. This is a most serious and significant regional initiative. We look forward to this study challenging us to be creative and ambitious. We see this TPP initiative as something that can be done by a group of true believers that will serve to give impetus and inspire other APEC members to build out from this progressive hub. This is doable and quicker than some people might imagine. And this is not in contradiction to our work at the WTO and to our wider APEC ambitions. Indeed, success there could send a message elsewhere. And we have a special relationship and special responsibilities with the small nations of the South Pacific. These are our brothers and sisters and cousins. They are fragile countries. They're in the lowest tier of achieving the Millennium Development Goals. They are vulnerable. They're exposed to the impact of climate change. They're vulnerable to those who would seek to exploit their resources or to use them as a haven for illicit activities. The US plays a constructive role in this in our region. Again, I look forward to this study identifying new, fresh, innovative ways we can work together and share ambitions. We need hard questions. We need to look at hard options. And therefore, serious forensic work needs to be done. Tommy Coe was right. The journey is almost as important as the destination. And so we hope that this journey will enable Americans to learn more about New Zealand and to refresh their knowledge of what we have to offer. Our country has changed dramatically in the last few decades. There are opportunities a lot of American businesses just wouldn't understand, because every time they see a New Zealander, they think of butter and sheep meat and rugby. We are wider and we are bigger than that. Our film industry, our IT sector, we are the most open economy in the world after Singapore and Hong Kong, and they don't have any cows or sheep. Now, Secretary Clinton has said that our relationship is the best it's been in 25 years. That's true. I hope in 10 years we can look back and do another report and audit what we have done and look back with pride and satisfaction to the work you're doing as a beginning. The report is timely. It is going to be released at our next New Zealand-US Business Partnership Forum that will be held in Christchurch. This report should play an important role in setting the agenda for that meeting and a future agenda. And can I thank you in conclusion for the kind words you said and other dear friends have said about the problems in Christchurch. This is my old electorate. It has been a shocker. We have been lucky. No one got hurt. 7.4, about 100 aftershocks. And I am, if I can be excused of being slightly nationalistic and chauvinistic for a minute. Our guys did well. When I rang people to see how they're getting on, the roads are broken up, the civil society went to work, the football clubs, the soldiers' clubs, the fire brigade, everybody's gone to work, the government was on time. Our Earthquake and War Damages Commission, which reinsures, will probably be making some Swiss bankers sweat at the moment. The system began to work, and I'm full with pride of how our citizens have behaved. Burglaries went down. That's just not because I'm up here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ambassador. You know, when John Hamry asked me to come to CSIS, it was sort of a gut check because, like the ambassador, I was also doing other things. But I probably wouldn't have had the confidence to do it if it wasn't for a real inspiration, and that inspiration is Kurt Campbell. He what he's doing with Asia policy for the United States, I truly find inspiring. He's got a hell of a lot of challenges in the toolkit that he's got to deal with. But this is a man who has real vision, like the ambassador. He does it with a very special style and sense of humor. He has got convening power that I've never seen before, and it's just a real pleasure to work with Kurt Campbell. I'd like, I think I don't need to go into a detailed introduction of Kurt and his background, but please join me in welcoming the Assistant Secretary for East Asia and the Pacific, Kurt Campbell. Thank you.
I often notice that when people, you know, introduce folks, they say things that are nice and very grateful for Ernie. But when I get introduced, people always say things. He has a very special style. And you notice in Asia, that often can go kind of both ways, if you know what I'm saying. So it's great to be here. I also want to just thank the ambassador and John. There isn't one word either of them said that I wouldn't support 100%, and it's great to be on this panel with them. I have to also say, just as a quick tribute to Ernie, not only is this report and this effort unbelievably timely, and it is also the case that we are at the best possible place that we can be in terms of 25 years, but there is so much we can do over the course of the next couple of years. And this report can be a vision document. It can be a roadmap. It can help convene and drive this relationship over the next couple of years, and I could not be more enthusiastic about it. I just all of you know, Ernie's been at CSIS for I think just about a year. I've never seen a person energize a set of issues more effectively than Ernie has, and it's just fantastic to work with him. And the fact that CSIS is taking on this study at a time that we're at such a critical phase, I just couldn't be more supportive of. Our entire team at the State Department and the Pentagon and the White House are anxious to help and support this effort as we go forward. I have to say, I was struck when the ambassador was talking about tourism. I have my own tourism story, which I will just relate to you very quickly. It's so wonderful to see so many friends in the audience. One of my closest and dearest friends here is here, Peter Watson, who, frankly, is a son of New Zealand and introduced me to the country. And his father served with great distinction during the Battle of Britain, and just had a great opportunity to get to know the country through him. I was on vacation there with him and four other fellows at the end of my time at the Pentagon. My wife, I have a whole slew of daughters now, but she was pregnant with our first one. It was a little bit of a difficult pregnancy, and I had to come for business, but then we took a little time subsequently. My wife was about 8 months pregnant, and I still recall we had an unbelievably wonderful time, just off the charts, and I was on the phone. Peter had a cell phone, and we were calling, and my wife said, "Well, how's it going?" And I was on the phone with her, and I said, "I'm having the best time I've ever had in my entire life." And Peter was good enough to give me some advice subsequently how to fine-tune those talking points. So unfortunately, a little too late for that particular encounter, but I want to thank Peter for his friendship and support of this relationship as we go forward. We also have to take a moment not only to recognize the challenge that the people of Christchurch are facing. When I was in New Zealand about a month ago, unfortunately, we were there during the tragic demise of one of New Zealand's finest in Afghanistan. I just want to take a moment to recognize the contributions of New Zealand and the sacrifices they are making along with us in critical places like Afghanistan. I just want to say a couple of things, if I can, about the relationship and about where I think we need to go. First of all, when governments come into power, they always do studies and sort of reviews. And it seemed to us, as we came into power, although there had been some initial steps taken to improve the relationship, and that effort was already well underway, and we really need to commend the good, strong work of the Bush administration and of Chris Hill. But when we did our review, it became very clear that this was a bilateral relationship that was profoundly underperforming. And when John very delicately said, when we were divided by just a couple of issues, the truth is it was one issue. In fact, and in every other issue, when it comes to issues of poverty, of climate change, of regional architecture, New Zealand has been a friend, a supporter, a sounding board. And it was very clear to us that we needed to take steps to move beyond some of the challenges that we have faced over the last 25 years on nuclear-related matters and focus more on the issues that unite us than those that are difficult or challenging, that one issue. And so we've put that issue aside, and we are focusing now on the issues that are most important for us as we move forward. That doesn't mean in any way that particular issue, the nuclear issue, is not a difficult one. It is. But there are so many other matters that really require a closer coordination and cooperation between the United States and New Zealand. What we've seen over the course of the last couple of years is a deeper interaction at the highest levels. Ambassador Moore delicately said that Prime Minister Key came up and made a contribution at the nuclear summit. I would go well beyond that. I was there at the nuclear summit. One of the key players who animated the discussions, who drove the deliberations was Prime Minister Key, already a key player on the international stage. And he developed real chemistry with President Obama. And I was struck at how important New Zealand's contribution was on nuclear issues. And I must say, in many respects, what we saw with the nuclear summit was the United States and other countries really adopting an agenda that New Zealand has championed for decades. And so in many respects, it was a validation of the strong, clear principles of nuclear security and nonproliferation that New Zealand has believed in, has made part of their national policy for decades. And it was a very welcome development, and I cannot imagine a more effective prosecutor of those national policies than Prime Minister John Key. In addition, we've had a series of interactions at the Pacific Island Forum, and those meetings have been critical for us. I think one of the things that we've heard not only from Australia and New Zealand is that the United States needs to profoundly step up its game in the Pacific. And if you look over the course of 20 years, we have essentially walked away from some of our most important historic, strategic, and moral commitments to the Pacific, areas where our forefathers, my father, fought, and Americans died and worked towards bringing a better future to. New Zealand has been one of those countries that has urged the United States to play a more active role, not just in the security of the Pacific, but in the prosperity, in the humanitarian challenges that many of these poor, small island nations face. And we are trying to do so. You will notice that later this month, Secretary Clinton will be meeting with all the heads of the Pacific Island states and will be underscoring our return in some measure to the Pacific. We are restarting our USAID missions in the Pacific, something that had been suspended several years ago. That is a specific recommendation from our New Zealand friends. And we look to work on a range of issues going forward in the islands in particular. When you look at the issues that we have the potential to work on going forward, I just want to underscore a few of them. Clearly, a lot of follow-on work associated with the nuclear summit. Again, Prime Minister Key helping drive the agenda in terms of what's next and the subsequent meeting in South Korea. New Zealand will be playing a key role there. We are continuing to work closely together the challenges that we're facing now in Afghanistan. And again, very grateful for the support on the ground from our New Zealand friends. So we are working to engage in not only some exercises, but also some sharing of critical information on the issues that we're facing in Afghanistan per se. We are also working much more closely on regional security and political issues in the Asian Pacific region overall. If you look at the travel patterns and engagement for instance, of China. The level of engagement that China has with New Zealand is quite extraordinary. And in many respects, we can learn from New Zealand friends about their own engagement on political and trade issues. And so we are beginning a series of discussions with New Zealand about the larger Asian Pacific region, something that we've done in an ad hoc manner in the past, but we're hoping to do in a more structured way going forward. We are trying to work with New Zealand on critical issues, new cutting-edge security and political matters like climate change. Clearly, this is an area, again, where New Zealand, like nuclear issues in the past, New Zealand is on the cutting edge, and we are looking forward to that closer coordination going forward. We, the ambassador talked, I think, powerfully about the TPP, and I don't think there's much I can add to that, only that we will look for New Zealand to help drive us, to provide inspiration, and to support this effort. And we share his view that this can be a critical ingredient in an effective, optimistic, outward-looking economic agenda of the United States. And it's just absolutely essential. And one of the reasons that the ambassador is here, and when he talks about coming back into public service and putting on the uniform, he believes his one of his key roles will be to drive this negotiation forward, and we welcome that. We support that, and we are heartened by it, and I look forward to, personally, to engaging with him on this critical effort in the months ahead. And then finally, New Zealand has been a big supporter of the United States in terms of architecture. If you look at Europe, for instance, you have really dramatic innovations over the course of the last 30 years in terms of architecture. Asia has been relatively slow to build the kinds of deep organizational institutions that will help drive the future in terms of politics and security and economics. And it was New Zealand, among other countries, that really encouraged the United States to take a role and join the East Asia Summit. And we're grateful for that. We are having consultations with New Zealanders about that role ahead. If I can just say a word about what I think is going to be important for this study going forward. One of the things that I am struck by in government is how much structured mechanisms drive the agenda of government. So if you look at what our senior officials do, they spend an inordinate amount of time engaging with our friends in Europe. Now, Europe is extremely important, critical for our future and our past, but the bilateral and multilateral mechanisms that are in place really provide, in many respects, a calendar of engagement. And so one of the things that I would look for in this study are recommendations about structure, recommendations about specific meetings that will help organize the effort of both of our governments. I can't think of a more timely report. I want to, again, commend CSIS. I see the wonderful president of CSIS, John Hamry, is here. We followed him. I was just got back from Beijing, and every meeting I had, the senior leader would say, well, you know, we just heard from Dr. Hamry, and he said X. And so we were all taking notes, trying to make sure that our talking points matched his. Grateful for his leadership on this effort. We think this is absolutely essential. We scanned the literature. There's really been nothing like it for a considerable period of time. This is really a unique opportunity, and very grateful for Ernie and for the entire team in taking this on. And we look forward to working closely with him in this, not only the as he said, the Tommy Koh principle, not only the ultimate outcome, but the process itself. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kurt. We have time for several questions, but we will wrap up at the end of the hour. So just usual rules. Please just identify yourself and the organization you're with. I think I saw the hand in the back, and then we'll
Hi,
go to you. Hi.
How are you? Connie Lohan for Scoop, New Zealand. Welcome, Mr. Ambassador. I appreciate the words that you've all said about Christchurch, about the earthquake, and I know the State Department has done a lot. I've been trying to find out whether President Obama has called the Prime Minister or called anybody in New Zealand or whether he plans to. And is the U.S. giving any direct help to New Zealand right now?
I almost found out about the earthquake because the U.S. ambassador in Wellington rang me. And Kurt rang, and people are ringing, and I'm just overwhelmed with the solidarity that's been shown. I don't know, frankly, whether the president himself has rung, but we're asked to pass on his thoughts and solidarity with our people. So we are very, very pleased with what we've heard from all our friends in the States at all levels, from the highest to the chap in the restaurant.
Hi, Foster Klug with the Associated Press. I was hoping to ask Secretary Campbell a question about another big story in Asia, the political meetings in North Korea. What does the United States expect from these meetings? Do you see them as pivotal? Do you see them as not changing much in the scheme of things? And also on the nuclear talks, does the United States need an apology or an admission of guilt from North Korea before those talks can go forward? Thanks.
Thank you. I'm happy to answer the question. I do want us to focus most of the session, if at all possible, on New Zealand. We'll have lots of opportunities subsequently. I think the meeting you're talking about is the Party Congress that's taking place in North Korea. To be perfectly honest, we're also watching for next couple of days about what to expect, and there have been lots of reports about possible introductions of the Kim Jong-il's son and some role that he may be playing. In truth, we have really no indication one way or the other, and we are watching like others in Asia. I think it would be fair to say that we are in the process of deep consultations, not just with our allies, but also with others in the surrounding region about next steps associated with North Korea. Ambassador Bosworth and Ambassador Kim will be in Asia next week. I think we believe that it will be critical for there to be some element of reconciliation between the North and the South for any process to move forward, and we've communicated that very clearly to all parties involved.
Yeah, my fault. I should have said it at the outset. Please do focus on New Zealand questions for this meeting. Sean?
Thanks. Sean Tandon with AFP. I'll stick to New Zealand on this, both for Secretary Campbell and for the ambassador. I know you mentioned that you want to move beyond just the one disagreement, but what about that disagreement, the nuclear issue? Is there a way for the U.S. and New Zealand to be full-fledged allies despite the disagreements on the nuclear issue? And perhaps has President Obama's stance changed the dynamic?
Well, I think Kurt made the point. There is a difference, but it's not such a big difference that it stops us cooperating just about every other corner of the world, and that difference stays. But here's the truth. In Afghanistan and in all sorts of places, New Zealanders are working alongside Americans, and we're in places where America is not, but where America's interests are involved, but we can do the job, whether it's Timor, whether it's Solomon Islands or whatever. So I'm not saying things have moved away, but they have moved forward, and we find all these points of light where we cooperate. This may well be a subject for historians to puzzle about in the future.
I would just simply say I think that the United States and New Zealand currently are the closest possible friends, and we share. And I think one of the things that we are finding in our initial discussions about a range of issues is how close our regional, global, economic, and strategic perceptions are about the way forward.
In fact, I will tell you quite honestly, the United States and New Zealand see the world in such similar terms. In fact, in many respects, much closer than some countries that would be described as formal allies in the current environment. I think I'm heartened by that, and I think it's a fantastic foundation to build on to move forward.
I'm Dick Allen. 48 years ago, I had the pleasure of turning the key in the door of a building in Georgetown that started the Center for Strategic Studies, then at Georgetown, and now CSIS. And at that time, I stepped aside after turning the key in the door to allow Admiral Arleigh Burke and David Abshire, my two colleagues, and a secretary in. We were four people. Admiral Burke was a great admirer of New Zealand, and Admiral Burke had many friends there. This study probably represents the culmination of his feelings, and I commend all of those involved with it, since I know several of them indeed quite well. I also respond to Mike Moore's blogs, but he stopped writing his blog when he was named ambassador. I live in New Zealand, and I'm also affiliated with this institution on its advisory board and with the Hoover Institution. I lecture at the University of Otago in New Zealand, New Zealand's oldest university, not far from Christchurch, which is a competing university. And I'm also a grape grower in the Gibson Valley, which is the way I like to identify myself on shows like Kim Hill, 9 to noon, and in my editorials, that are op-eds that I write for the Otago Daily Times. So I watch both places. We spend many months in both the United States and in Washington, and I know Washington's ways. I've served as national security advisor here at home and international economic and trade advisor to President Nixon at the time, to go way, way back. This relationship is key, and it's appropriate that we have a John Key and a Bill English, and a Murray McCulley, all extremely able individuals who are completely dedicated, I'm sure, to this process, just as Mike is and Kurt is on this side. And I'd like to commend also, and this would be an exception on many in many areas of today, the work of Secretary Clinton, I would hope, aided and abetted by Kurt in every respect and at each initiative, for having taken steps to restore a relationship with our allies in the region and with our partners in the region, such as Singapore, especially Tommy Koh, who has long been an advocate of no longer being neglected. So this Trans-Pacific Partnership gives great hope here. I was sat with Jim Sutton the night that of the free trade agreement with China many years ago, and was surprised that here it was, little New Zealand at 4 million people signing a free trade agreement with China, yet cannot get one as of yet with the United States. The difficulties lie in the Congress, and if that long-winded explanation might help lead to the question, what will be done about the United States Congress? Because it's the United States Congress that will impede and prohibit, based on present interests, any Trans-Pacific Partnership that involves an additional 5 or 6 free trade agreements, when not even the Mexican free trade agreement can be implemented fully, and we have others that are on the doorstep, such as the ROK, much less now begin with 5 or 6 new ones of many regions that we don't really fully understand and know much about. I apologize for the length of that, but the question encapsulates lots of difficulty and lots of work, maybe even beyond Secretary Campbell's tenure over the next 4, he thinks 8 years, but I'm not so sure.
Well, it was a Plato who said man is essentially a political animal. None of us underestimate the politics, and there are friends in this room who can assist us with this. We have to carry the load as well. There's a responsibility on us, the partnership members. And while I've listened to the arguments, you keep thinking and learning. We must get Tommy Coe down, and he can run a good dinner. We must apply the multiplier effect to all the partners. And if you, I remind you, Australia, Singapore, Brunei, most likely Vietnam, Peru, Chile, this is getting a critical mass. And I've learned that we don't know everything. If we were so clever, we would have done it. And we're studying carefully how the Aussies and Chile and others did it. We are meeting as a group. We understand that we have to do the work. And we have friends in high places. We've got friends in a couple of low places as well. Although we will be asking you, sir, and other dear friends at certain times to make the case. But this is about everybody winning. And this is about a group I like to call the true believers, who are adults, who want to do something serious about the 21st century, to produce a model going right back to supply lines, the whole deal. In the WTO, we compromised a lot. In APEC, we compromised a lot. Let's get something up here of stunning substance that can be announced at a certain time, which I hope will edge the work in Geneva and prove an inspiration to others in APEC. To me, this is an enormous disappointment. I thought the Doha round was going to do it. It hasn't, unfortunately, yet. But this is not a contradiction to Doha, nor is it a contradiction to APEC. But we have to do the work as well. We understand. This is a complex town. Huh? We understand. We have to do our share. Having best friends is not enough.
First of all, let me just kind of say a word, just thank Richard for his service and also for his prodding over decades about this relationship. I remember he came to see me when I was in the Pentagon in the 1990s and urged then we needed to do more with New Zealand. And I guess this would be in one of those categories, Richard, of better late than never. And it's in many respects a fulfillment of your commitment to the relationship. And I have not tasted the wine from your vineyard, but I look forward on the next trip down. I'm gonna come in February, and I'll look forward hopefully to open a bottle with you on that. If I can just say just one thing, and I understand all the complexities of the politics of trade and economic engagement. I spend my life in Asia. I spend a lot of time on the road. I was, again, with John, we were in China. Anyone who does not understand the drama that's playing out in Asia in terms of trade and economics, and that many countries in Asia want more, not less, of the United States. And they want us off the sidelines. They want us to be traditionally, as we have been, optimistic, not anxious. They want us committed on the playing field of Asia's trade, macroeconomic and other economic playing fields. And it's just an inexorable logic of our engagement. And so we all recognize some of the difficulties. My own personal view is that the United States has to understand the imperative of this kind of engagement. And I agree with the ambassador on TPP. And I must say I see his hand at work already in terms of bringing people together, making the logic for a high-quality engagement, underscoring that the region will not wait. It will not wait for us. It has slowed down a little bit so that we can get on, but it's not going to wait very much longer. And we need to understand the imperative that rests right in front of this generation of Americans. And that's one of the reasons that, frankly, we were so grateful that the government decided to go and have Mike suit up again to come up and serve his country so effectively on an issue that, frankly, we all are looking to help us chart this new course.
I'd like to I'm sorry, we're not going to be able to do additional questions. We've gone over time, and we won't be able to do these things if I keep these guys over time. They won't come back. So thank you all for coming. A particular thanks. Oh,
could I give you one other just as we conclude, one other suggestion, Ernie? I think there is enough of a community that you might want to consider doing a relatively regular lunch or meeting in which you have people speak about the issues that are animating the U.S.-New Zealand relationship, the role that New Zealand plays. I think it would be very valuable to go forward. And that would be something that I think, in addition to this overall effort that you're – sorry to interrupt your –
No, that's good. And we'll work with John Mullen on that initiative. I think that's a great recommendation. Thank you, Ambassador. Thank you, Kurt Campbell. Thank you, John Mullen.
Should invite to the forum and then to get these time.